Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Believe You Me podcast. We are back. It is Thursday. I am Michael and you are Lewis.
I am Lewis and you are Michael. It's nice to see you, Mr. Michael. You're in a good mood today, drinking your tea, enjoying a little bit of life.
Yes, yes. Well, of course, you know, the sun is shining. Today is another chance to seize the day to achieve your goals and any other such nonsense that you will read on somebody's Instagram this morning. But good day, Thursday, big fights of the weekend. Can't wait for them. We'll get into all the action in a little bit. Want to say a big thank you to Justin Gagey for coming on Monday's show. I had a great response to that. So shout out Justin Gagey once again. How you doing, Lewis? What's going on?
I'm good. I got a gig in a little bit. We're driving out to Pennsylvania doing an outdoor gig, myself and Big J and Zach Amico. So that should be fun. You know, just loving life. A little bit rainy here in New York City. So, you know, I don't know. But in New York City, it's a little different. When it rains in New York City, it's kind of nice. There's like a thing to it. It just feels kind of like, I don't know. It just feels like a mood.
Yeah, well, it's kind of nice when it rains everywhere sometimes. It all depends. I mean, if you're living in fucking Africa and you've been living through a drought forever and then the heavens open up and down comes the rain, I don't know. It's just kind of a thing there. It's just kind of a vibe. you know, in England, some of my friends, and I quote, they're all complaining saying, roll on winter. My mate Blanky, right? Because the weather's nice.
We got to get Blanky on the show one day because the amount of times Blanky makes, I would say, one out of every other episode.
Yeah, maybe. But he's the weather right now in England is like 85, 88, whatever. They're saying it's the hottest six consecutive days in a row in like 50 years or something. And all my mates are complaining. All they do, listen, I'm English and I love the English, of course, but English as a nation, we are a nation of complainers, right? When it's cold, we're complaining, we want the sun. When the sun's there, it's too fucking hot. All the salad is sold out at Tesco's, the beer gardens are packed, everyone's got the shirt off, and it's only 17 degrees Celsius, you know. It's not warm, but yeah, they're all complaining because it's too warm right now. But come on, suck it up.
Suck it up. I was on your Instagram yesterday. I saw that. What's going on? George St. Pierre has been hired to be a commentary person. And I don't know, but, you know, please let me know what's going on. I just never thought of George St. Pierre's voice as being the most, like, soothing.
It depends what you know where you come from, because it, to some people this is how they like to talk, you know. Don't worry, I'm not going to do that the whole time. No, I was just going through Instagram. You know, people tag you, so I go on my tagged pictures, and there was a picture of me with John Anik and George St. Pierre, George with a headband on, me with an eye patch, and I thought that was funny, so I reposted it and said, congrats, George. He's not joining our team, if you will, so to speak, the English-speaking team. He'll be doing it on the French commentary side of things, so congratulations to George. That's a great guy. He's got an excellent insight for the game, and who knows? I would love to commentate with George, though. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I would love to hear that. You just fucking taking shots at him the whole time and him not getting it?
No.
Didn't he lose his mind a few years ago? Like, isn't he like, does he think aliens are visiting him and like...
Yeah, okay, it's a little disrespectful. He's the greatest of all time. He's a nice guy. But yes, okay, that is true. That is true. And that was definitely one of my avenues of antagonism when we were fighting. You know, I thought I'd just play with that a little
bit. Avenues of antagonism. Michael Bisping, the video game.
Avenues of Antagonism. Level one. That's pretty good, actually. Avenues of Antagonism. Yeah, no, it was. But no, George is the best. He's a great guy. He's a gentleman. So, yeah, congrats, George. Congrats.
Was there anybody, I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's just because you reminded me when you said Avenues of Antagonism. Was there anybody that you didn't antagonize? It didn't get too personal with Kelvin. It was too fast and too much of a quick of a turnaround to like really take too many shots. But kind of coming up, once you sort of hit your stride in the UFC, you were known to just talk shit and you got into some like crazy. Was there anybody where it just didn't kick off where you were like, I just can't even talk shit about this guy. It doesn't work.
Yeah, there was a few. There was a few, certainly in the early days. I'm trying to think. Well, Eric Schaefer was my first fight on there, but I was out in Vegas completely by myself, no team with me, training on my own, running up and down the hotel steps. And I didn't have any interactions with Eric Schaefer. So there you go. Elvis Sinisek, my next one. Again, same again. You know, because you got to remember, this was pre-social media. You know what I mean? Prior to everybody, you know, being able to connect with one another. That's why the world is so different now. Like I did a podcast 2 days ago for some Polish dude, right? That just hit me up out of the blue. And very nice guy, Petro. I think he listens to this. Anyway, you know, you have your filtered messages on Instagram. So you sit on the loo, you know, you're taking a dump, let's be honest, and you're scrolling through. And it's a new thing I'm doing in my life. When I get a lot of requests. Can you do this? Can you send a video shout out? My mate's getting married. You know, I'm doing a podcast. And I'm like, yep. I thought I'll do a few every day. I'm giving back. It's karma. It's giving season. So that's what I've started doing now. I thought, I'm a miserable bastard. I can't sit there in my ivory tower saying no to everybody. So I started saying yes. And I said yes to this guy. I sent him a little voicemail. I'm like, yeah, no problem, mate. Give me a shout near the time. And this guy, God bless him, I busted his balls on the podcast, must have sent me 1,000 messages trying to organize the time and this and that. And then the next day, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, this guy won't leave me alone. So I started like,
and then when it comes time to do it, you're like, I do not want to do it. Why did I say yes?
Yes, of course. The guy barely speaks English. The text is like totally broken. I'm like, it's going to be the most awkward thing ever. And then he starts with the emotional blackmail. Then he starts telling me, because I never responded, sorry, very busy man. Don't live my entire life on social media. He's chasing this interview. He was a very nice guy, by the way. But he messages me, he says, Michael, very, very disappointed that you're not responding to me. But I got to say, not surprised. And I was like, whoa. Do not pull the not surprised card on me, young man. Jesus Christ.
You are acting exactly as I thought you would have acted. That's fucking hilarious. Dude, it's so funny because people do this all the time. It happens to me. I mean, probably a few times a week at this point, somebody has messaged me, you know, a dozen times, and I'm just not, I'm not in that other box like that, right? So you get your messages, but that other box, you sort of say, all right, you're taking a dump, you're on a train, you're traveling, you're like, let me just check what's been going on. It's been a week. And then you sort of go through these messages, and some people, like, they have this thing where they think you're ignoring them and they take it very personally. They're like, yeah, you know what? If you think you're too big to answer me back, I'm like, dude, I haven't fucking seen this message. They look like an absolute crazy person.
Oh, yeah, no, I get that all the time because I'm going to try and bring some up. Now, bring up your filtered message request. Oh, let's go through the last three or four and see what we have. As long as they're a question. But I had one the other day where it was, and I didn't see it because obviously, you know, you don't see them all the time. And then I eventually came across his message because he just sent a new one. So it was at the top and it was, Michael, big fan. Hey, Mike, big fan. And I hadn't seen it. And then the next one was,
big fan.
Then the next one was, fuck you, Mike. Fuck you, Mike, prick. I'm like, whoa. That was a fucking, that escalated fast. That got out of control.
I got this. This one's really good. Oh, fuck, dude. I want to find him. I got to find this guy. Okay, so it's one guy and he's written me this message maybe 6 times. And I've seen this message. I've never gotten back to him. And I would have gotten back to him had I not found out that he writes this message to multiple comics. I can't find the message, but he essentially goes, I'm a huge fan of yours. I just contracted cancer recently.
Oh.
And it would really mean a lot to me if you could send me some t-shirts, albums, DVDs, whatever it is before I die. And then he puts an address and he sent me this message. I've never responded, but maybe 6 or 7 times, but I haven't responded because he sent this message to Big J, Burke Kreischer, Ari Shaffir, a bunch of comics. We've all talked about it at this point. But this guy, I don't even know if he has cancer, but he's like hustling comedians out of free shit.
Well, good for him. You know what I mean? You got to do what you got to do. You got to be a mover and shake. You got to be a player. You got to get creative. This guy here just says, my guy's more direct. He just gets right to it. This is Haktan, whoever that is. He says, I need your help. Please. I need money. Please help me. No. I have people. I swear to God. I need money. I need money. I'm like, I gotta say, I appreciate the directness. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's not have the flirting phase. Just come in and try and raw dog me right from the start. What do you need? I'm a busy guy. You need cash? It's a no. But thanks for getting spit to the on point.
It. He didn't do anything. He just fucking jammed it right in.
Yeah, no, exactly. So anyway, we're not here to this one. Doggy, baby boy, doggy. Once again now, Jason Ellis is on The Fighter and the Kid. By the way, I've just randomly scrolled across this.
Yeah.
Jason Ellis, as we know, Luis J. Gomez, fight, journal. Coming up soon, he's going to be fighting him. There's a big opponent, so he won't talk about him, but this came up. Doggy, baby boy, doggy. Once again now, Jason Ellis is on The Fighter and the Kid, saying he will kick Luis's ass. Baby boy, tell Luis to stop making videos with flashlights and get fucking serious. Train this Puerto Rican rattlesnake and make him a J-Lo Ice Cube eating motherfucker anaconda. Jason Ellis is a fucking clown, doggy. You better train Luis to whoop his ass.
Now the pressure falls on you, Mr. Bisping.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't, because I'm in California and you're in New York City.
I'm going to come out in the next month, baby boy, so you better...
I'll train you via Zoom. Let's go. Get those hands up, buddy. Let's go.
Actually, to be honest with you, training with Michael Bisping via Zoom is probably still better than training with most mixed martial arts coaches in this country.
I don't know about that. That's a little disrespectful to a lot of mixed martial arts coaches, but I do get what you're saying. There is charlatans, there is fakes, there is wannabes and pretenders everywhere, but there's also a lot of good people, a lot of great coaches. I sound like Donald Trump. There's a lot of great people. There's a lot of great people out there. On both sides.
Your Trump impression is spot on. I'm going to be honest with you. Better than your Jason Pierre.
It's perfect.
So tell me what you would do here. So I had another guy hit me up and because I was talking about how I want weights and shit, right? So he was like, oh, dude, I work for this company and we have like, we're just like in these buildings. I don't even know what he does. Okay. But he said, I have access to like these weights and all these different like gyms. Like, he sent me a picture. Okay. It's a big rack, maybe 300 pounds worth of plates, bar, bench. Pretty nice stuff.
Sounds great. What's the issue? Continue.
So he wants me to do ad reads on another podcast, on Real Ass Podcast, for him, for whatever his business is. And I'll do that because I think it's kind of funny to just do it. Who gives a shit? It's funny. But he wants to drop them off to my new house. So now I'm concerned.
Oh, God.
Like, I don't want to give this guy my home address. Like, what if he's a fucking psycho?
I get this all the time. I have people that hit me up. And again, first world problems by far. And they're being kind. They're like, Mike, I'm such and such from this company. We want to send you some stuff. Give me your house address. I'm like, no. I don't need some kind of psycho calling me up or turning up, you know. So I turned down a lot of free things, Luis.
If you want to get B and C list celebrities to home addresses, all you got to do is offer them some free shit. Because I'll tell you right now, I'm debating just giving this guy my home address right now and he can just murder me. I guarantee you've given out your address for some product that you like. You're like, that's great. Yeah, I want that.
I have. I look at them. I assess them. I vet to them. I'm like, this guy seems legit. He's got multiple thousand followers. You know, when you look at it, the guy doesn't even have a profile picture. He's got 17 followers, but he follows 3,000. It's like, yeah. No. You're not having it.
My guy does not look good. My guy, I almost want to send you his picture. I don't want to show him on here because it's fucked up. I want to send you his picture, Bisping, right now. And
let's get him on the podcast. Call him up right now. Let's go.
No way. Dude, look at him. I'm going to send you his picture right now. You got to react to this in real time because I don't want this guy having my home address. Hold on.
All right, okay. And we apologize, ladies and gentlemen. We got many topics. We're a little loose on the ground on non-MMA stuff here. So we're talking about random Instagram shit.
And we actually have an insane amount of MMA news.
Yeah, we do.
So it's kind of funny that we have...
This guy's suspicious. Why is he wearing that around his neck? For the people that don't know, he's got a neck brace on, right? Is that the best profile picture he's got?
I think it's a mask.
Oh, it could be a mask. Okay. But it's more fun to say a neck brace. Okay.
He looks like he'd be in a band with Brian.
What you mean,
Brian,
the guy that could beat the fuck out of Luis J. Gomez, McKay? Yeah.
He hasn't showed up for sparring yet. Brian's talking all that shit, but he ain't showed up for sparring.
Anyway.
I'm sorry. I have podcasts to edit.
Yeah, but Brian, 13 podcasts a week that I fucking star on.
Whoa. Brian, we gotta deal with this. I gotta come up to New York soon. I will officiate this sparring match. I can't wait for it. I'm very excited. Anyway, let's get into some of these MMA news and topics that we have. And Harrington, hammer fisting with Harrington will be will be visited at some point on the show. But of course, we would be remiss if we didn't start with the big fight that is DC versus Stipe Miocic, the rubber match this weekend. I'm excited for it, Lewis. I mean, it's a huge fight. The heavyweights always bring action. But these two fighters, of course, are the two best heavyweights that we've got. They don't like each other. It is a rubber match, 1-1 going into it. We got press conferences back for the first time later this afternoon. That's been a while. I'd forgotten about press conferences.
Yeah.
I'd forgot that they weren't happening. And there is a great feeling of excitement when you have a big fight and then you have like a big press conference, of course, and then the guys talk a little shit. They go back and forth. It gets you hyped for the fight, Lewis.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we were sort of like just thankful for the fact that the MMA gods blessed us with fights and we were able to sort of get back into the mix. And you sort of forget all the extra little bells and whistles that go with fight week. The extra promotion. I watched the countdown for the first time in a little while and I really, really enjoyed it. Really got hyped watching the DC Stipe countdown. So yeah, these guys are just awesome in general. Both of them awesome in their own right for their own reasons. Stipe being the most accomplished UFC heavyweight, and DC, being champ 205 and heavyweight. I'm super pumped about it. I'm excited to see if the press conference is going to deliver on any sort of fireworks or anything, because for the most part, they're fairly respectful guys. You know what I'm saying? I think DC at this point has gotten a little sassy, but it's not like it's not like Connor where they're throwing bottles or Nate Diaz where they're throwing punches. These guys are going to, for the most part, be somewhat respectful.
They will be respectful. There'll be a few digs here and there. And you're right. They are more respectful guys. Stipe and DC, both of them are, they don't embarrass themselves. Right? They're not going to get up there and start acting like a fool. They're not going to get up there and act like a child. But they are going to get up there and be very confident in themselves. And they're going to be very confident in winning the fight. And that's all we need, right? That's what you want to see from a press conference. You want to leave that. The idea for the UFC press conferences is that they watch that and people think, wow, this is going to be a great fight. I want to watch this fight. And I feel like it will have that effect on people. You're not going to see the controversy. You're not going to see the Athletic Commission finding people, bottles thrown everywhere. But you are going to see two guys, DC and Stipe, supremely fucking confident. They're uber competitive, the pair of them. DC is one of the most competitive people on the UFC roster, a lifetime competitor. And this potentially might be his last fight, and he gets to go out with a bang and maybe win back the UFC heavyweight championship. And then therefore Stipe on the other side, he's kind of insulted that DC thinks he's going to walk through him. And, so there's that competitiveness angle there. That's going to be really, really interesting to see how it plays out. And it is going to have the desired effect. But this Saturday, it's the big one, UFC 252, Stipe versus Cormier, massive pay-per-view, the rubber match, the trilogy. And it's poised to be one of the best fights this year. You're sat at home, you're watching, but you've got an idea who's going to win. Well, ever thought about putting that knowledge into action and having a stake at $1 million? Your chance to win a section of $1 million in prizes, Lewis? Do that at DraftKings.com.
I know they can. And I'll tell you right now, I'm excited about it. We already love the sport of mixed martial arts. You already love the sport of mixed martial arts. If you don't, what are you doing here? Is it Michael Bisping's hair? I don't think so, okay? You love the sport. You know it's the most exciting sport in the world. You're probably thinking, how could they possibly make the sport any more exciting? Well, here we go. DraftKings has done it. Because what they do is they let you basically have a little skin in every fight of the night. You pick six fighters, you stay under a certain salary cap, and you pile up points throughout the evening for advances, takedowns, and different action throughout the night. So you are essentially glued to every single fight. You're on the edge of your seat. Now you're in essentially competing with them. You're essentially a UFC fighter, really.
Yes. Okay, Lewis. Yes. Everybody listening to this, you are now in the UFC. I hope your defense is good because you might get knocked out. But if you want to try that and not get knocked out, but maybe win $1 million, download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code BYM to get a free shot at a share of $1 million in prizes with your first deposit. I said DraftKings.com earlier for some reason. That's wrong. You got to download the DraftKings app right now, as I say. And when you do, use the promo code BYM to get a free shot at a share of $1 million in prizes with your first deposit only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. There it is. I knew there was a website in there somewhere. That's if you want the details. Okay, where were we? Let's get back into it. You know, let's talk about the fight, because the first fight, I think the first fight, it wasn't a fluke, right? People, you know, Stipe says it was a fluke. People say it was a fluke. Listen, if the punch connects and knocks you out, it's not a fluke. DC meant to throw that shot. But there was a few things leading into that that kind of made it the perfect storm. I think Stipe a little bit was underestimating him. You know, I thought this guy's a little guy coming up to from light heavyweight, and now he's weighing in. He weighed in heavier than Stipe for the first one. I think he was like almost 260, Daniel Cormier. So I think Stipe might have thought, this guy's coming in out of shape. He's just a fat light heavyweight, which, as we know, isn't true. DC's super strong, super fast, very explosive. And he got caught with a shot. He allowed DC on the inside. They were fighting in the clinch, and he come up with that little shot. Stipe didn't see it. They said the ones you don't see, the ones that knock you out. It was from a tight angle. So it just landed. The punch was perfect in a tight clinch. You know, he maximized on the position and knocked him out cold. As we know, in the rematch, Stipe won that one. But even in the rematch, and I don't know if you watch it, I rewatched it again yesterday on Instagram. Sorry, UFC do these like little condensed versions of the fights. Have you seen those? Where like the main event, it might take 30 minutes to watch and get through it. So they just cut out all that, the little bits where there's nothing happening, to keep it action-packed for Instagram.
The Cliff's Notes.
Yeah, the Cliff Notes. There you go. Yeah. So I watched that again yesterday, and DC was definitely winning the fight. He took Stipe down in the first round. You know, he was landing the better shots. Third round, the tide started to change a little bit. Stipe started having more success. But as we know, round four, switched to those body shots and started doing a lot of damage. And obviously, ultimately, that set up the finish. So it's going to be interesting seeing the approach of how these, you know, how these guys approach this rematch, should I say.
Yeah, I mean, look, both of them know that they can beat the other one, right? So that's got to be, in a weird way, there's a level of confidence there where you know you can beat this guy, but they've also both lost to the other one. So it has to be a little bit of a mind fuck, right?
And it's a finish. Both have finished each other. You know what I mean? If one had finished the other, but the other one had finished him by decision, let's say Stipe won via decision, DC would go into the rematch thinking, this motherfucker can't finish me. But they've both experienced that. They both know now, going into this, they have to be wary of the other guy. They have to respect the punching power. They have to respect the wrestling. Because remember, Stipe took DC down as well, which was, I think, the fact that Stipe took DC down, I think it was round three. I might be wrong, but I think it was against the fence. That changed everything. And I feel that that led to the stoppage as well, not just the body shots, because DC was walking him down the whole time, almost with reckless abandon, like, I can't be taken down. I'm the superior wrestler, so I'm not concerned with that side of things. But when Stipe took him down, that sends a message, and it changes everything. It changes the dynamic of the fight. It lets DC know, hold on a minute, this motherfucker might actually take me down. So therefore, you have to change your style a little bit. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think also it is in the third round. At that point, Cormier is just not expecting it at all. I don't know that Stipe can execute that takedown at any point in that fight. Obviously, you know, Cormier has a massive advantage with the wrestling. I'm excited for the fight. The reality is, when we're talking about it, it also weirdly has this like, it could very well end up being a slow moving fight. Because both these guys have so much respect for each other, right? They both know they can be knocked out by the other one. I can imagine this fight at the very least starting off kind of slow.
Yeah, I can understand why you say that, but my response to that would be, and by the way, I'm not trying to disagree with you, but you know, DC's not a pussy and Stipe's not a pussy. And while they will definitely, to your point, have respect for one another, and there will be a feeling out process, I feel like it's not going to take long before these two start throwing down. You're not going to see an Ngannou, Derek Lewis type matchup here. DC is always value for money when he fights. So is Stipe. You know, so there will be a little tentativeness at the beginning, but they'll get into it pretty quickly. Pretty fucking quick. You know, Ben Askren, I think he was filling in for DC talking to Ariel Helwani, and he had an interesting point for DC. He gave him some advice. He said, DC, you went to something like 6 Olympic training camps. You are a better wrestler than this man. Don't forget that. Go out there. You know you can take this guy down at any time you want. Which, of course, a wrestler talking to a wrestler, and when DC has the credentials and Askren is from that world, he is going to think that. But in mixed martial arts, it's completely fucking different. I don't know if DC can just take him down whenever he wants. Because when you add in strikes and then you add in the takedown defense element and you add in the fence, it's a lot easier to defend takedowns. I had wrestlers come down to train with me when I was competing, like multiple time All-Americans and Division One wrestlers, and they couldn't take me down. You know what I mean? Because it's a different environment.
Well, defending a takedown is also easier than taking somebody down, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's another side of it. Whereas, like, I think you have to be, you don't have to necessarily be as accomplished of a wrestler to defend the takedown, especially if you're super athletic, you've been training the sprawl. This is, you know, this is a, it's a very specific sport. So, I 100% understand what you're saying. When did Ben Askren offer up this advice? Because, I mean, it's a little late now. Why don't you give him this advice 3 months ago instead of the week of the fight?
I think it was yesterday. DC's not watching podcasts right now. He's listening to his actual coaches. What was I going to say there about wrestling? I was going to say something.
How it's easier to defend a takedown than to actually execute a takedown.
Yeah, no, it is. Certainly with the cage as well. With the fence, that changes everything. You know, because think about it. If you're against the fence, they say double underhooks, right? So you got your two arms and they're under the armpits. That's called double underhooks. If you've got the double underhooks,
Breakdown.
They can't go down to the legs, right? And they can't grab the body and they can't, you know, they can't get hold of you essentially because you're controlling them with the double underhooks. The Dominic Cruz patented double underhooks that he talks about so much. But if you have those underhooks, realistically, you are in control. That's why you're going to do what's called chain wrestling. And DC was talking about this and Ben Askren was talking about this. You go from this, then you go to that. And then the guy defending has to completely, every time, alter his defense and where he's going to. Is he pushing the head? Is he getting an underhook? Is he pivoting off the fence? Because the first takedown attempt, as I say, if you get the underhooks, if you get a wizard, if you get the right position, you can defend. Right, and you can hold them there for a bit, and then the DC is going to get tired and he's going to back off. But if you keep adjusting, you go for a single leg to a high crotch to a body lock back to a double leg, you know, just keep altering the position. The person defending has to think on the fly and has to react at the right time. So that's going to be key for Daniel Cormier to get a takedown in this one, in this match.
Ooh, the Bisping breakdown. Now look, if Cormier was listening to this podcast, he might be able to utilize some of that information and take it into the fight.
Listen, I'll be honest. I think DC knows that. I think he's heard this fucking Englishman breaking down chain wrestling. Is that number one? You gave the advice all wrong. Okay,
you were way off.
It's factually incorrect. Everything you said is wrong, Mike. Okay, he's not gonna. I agree with you, Mike. By the way, Brian, we need the drops. We need the sound drops. They came for a second and then they disappeared. This is a classic time to throw in. I agree with you, Mike.
This is true.
Brian?
Yeah, we were at the studio that day.
Have the soundboard. Do not tell me you cannot make the soundboard work on your computer at home.
The way that I'm not going to explain this now. We'll do it after the show.
I'm sorry, Brian. I didn't mean to do that.
You see the way Brian put us in our non-producer places? You see that shit?
He's like, hey.
Harrington, take note. You see, when we try to fuck with Brian shut us the fuck down and went back to work, and we said, oh, I guess we'll move on.
Yeah. No, and he very nonchalantly had a pen in his hand and was like looking at his notes. He's like, look, listen, we'll deal with this after the show, okay? With a look in his face of determination. That's like, Lewis, I will fucking knee you in the face if you continue like this. I'm telling you, the way I'm going, I'm starting in a revolt. He is going to put you in your place. He's going to smack you down like the bitch you are, Lewis.
I can't wait. I really want him to. But I will tell you right now, Harrington, you need to take notes. Stop letting us bully you. People are like, oh, stop bullying Harrington. No, Harrington needs to stand up for himself and fight back a little bit. That's what needs to happen.
Yes, definitely. I've never been bullied. I don't know what you're talking about.
No. And you've never been right either. But anyway, welcome to the show, Harrington. Good to see you, buddy. Hope you're well. We're going to get to the hammer fisting shortly. All right, let's give some picks. Let's give some picks for this fight. It's been a while since we've done picks. I don't want to do this because I like Stipe, right? I like him a lot and I like DC. It's a tricky one.
Did somebody really ask you for a picture? as Steve?
Oh, yeah. I was outside a restaurant last week and some guy walks over. I could see him looking at me and he's there with his wife and kids. He says, "Hey, can I get a picture?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure, no worries." And then he walks over and goes, "Hey, Stipe, huge fan. Huge fan, Stipe." I'm like, "I'm the fucking Stipe, bro."
You told him? Oh, I wouldn't have told him, dude. Oh, you should have let him go post it. It would have been the best.
That would have been hilarious. But yeah, no, I told him. Anyway, this fight is going to be good. It's going to deliver. I don't think we're going to see a first round knockout like DC got the first time. I think it might resemble something like the second fight. It's going to go out into the deep waters. Both men are tough. Both men know what's on the line. This is for legacies, for the best heavyweight. I mean, Harrington, do you have anything to add on that, on the best heavyweight? And what about you, Lewis? Because they're saying whoever wins this is the best heavyweight of all time. And I'm inclined to agree with that. But if you look back through the ages, and I guess we could have done this before the show, but who else is there as a challenger to that moniker, shall we say?
I mean, Cain, but with the injuries, I feel like Cain never got off the same way, didn't have the same traction that Stipe had. Fedor obviously is the one that comes to mind, but you have to understand like the building blocks of MMA, where we're at. I mean, Stipe and Cormier smoke Fedor in his prime, smoke Fedor today. I mean, there's no, it's just a different level. And Fedor never tested himself at that level. And we don't really have the data to really give that prediction, but just sort of what we know. I mean, I don't think that you can really compare what Fedor did back in the day in Pride to what these guys are competing against today in modern mixed martial arts.
So let's just quickly go through this list because I just Googled it quickly and we've got a list here. We'll just give our quick thoughts. But, you know,
quick hits.
Not necessarily. But, you know, last night I was thinking about this. Who would be the best heavyweight? And Cain Velasquez obviously was one that came to mind. I just quickly Googled this. This is an article on Bleacher Report today or sometime recently. They've got Cain Velasquez at number 10. You know, he was a two-time heavyweight champion. And Cain Velasquez looked unbeatable back in the day. But even still, I understand to your point, the injuries and things like that. And he did take some losses. But I don't think that's fair. I mean, and also the last time we saw him was getting knocked out of Francis Ngannou. So I think that like kind of diminishes the memory. You know what I mean? The legacy that he had because Cardio Cain Velasquez was the man. Number 9, Mark Coleman. What do you think about that?
I'm a fan of Coleman, you know, but it's like, once again, it all sort of falls back to this conversation of, you know, what they do now. It's difficult to pick these old school guys over somebody like Stipe. It's just from a pure, like, you know, Stipe, you know, I defended the title more than anybody's ever defended the title. You know, any against the toughest competition in UFC history, the heavyweight division's never looked tougher than it's looked right now. You know, and it was notoriously always the weakest division across the board. So I just feel like I think Coleman's great. He's a legend, but he's a legend the same way Royce Gracie's a legend. I don't put Royce Gracie in the list of the top welterweights of all time. That's psychotic.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And you know, as you said, the somebody like Mark Coleman was great in his day, and to your point entirely, I'm not sure that skill set would stack up today. I mean, he was the godfather of ground and pound because nobody had seen fucking ground and pound. You know, no one had seen a wrestler come out and take somebody down, lie in their guard, and just smash him with headbutts and forearms and elbows.
He would get can opener submissions.
Yeah.
Where you just pull their head up and like people didn't know this big meaty wrestler pulling on your head. You're like, please get me out of here, I'm gonna die.
I can open a submission. All you have to do to escape that is open your guard.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do. You have someone in your guard, meaning you got your legs crossed around their midsection whilst lying on your back for the absolute casuals. And when they're pulling on your neck, just open your guard. Open your guard. And okay, it still hurts. It still sucks, but you shouldn't tell. All right, we're going to go through this list real quick. So number 9, Mark Coleman. Then number 8, they got Josh Barnett, who DC actually has a win over. Coming in at number 7, Junior Dos Santos. He'll be on the card as well with Rosenstrike. That should be a good fight. Kane actually has 2 victories over Junior Dos Santos. So that's
weird that Kane's below 2 guys that he has victories over, and Kane was a pioneer champion heavyweight.
And here's another interesting one. And again, I'm not disagreeing with this, but number six, Alistair Overeem. And Alistair Overeem does deserve it because of his resume. He's been around so long.
He's up there, in my opinion.
K1 champion, fought in Pride, fought in UFC, been a part of big fights. And in terms of the longevity of his career, I mean, it's absolutely sensational. But he never won a UFC championship, but they still have him higher than those guys.
Did he win interim?
No.
Not even interim. Okay. So, all right. So here's the thing. I'll say
Strikeforce heavyweight champion, Dream heavyweight champion, 2010 K1 World Grand Prix champion.
So, all right. So I put Stipe, or not Stipe, Alistair on that list of greatest of all time. Definitely top five, top three.
For sure.
Because of the fact that he's been competing for that long. He's competing sort of at the ass end of Mark Coleman's career, right? I think they probably, you know, probably fought on some of the same cards in Pride. But he's a, you know, he's been around forever. And he did it in Pride, did it in the UFC, and is still to this day competing with the absolute best. Any given Sunday, Alistair Overeem could be UFC heavyweight champion. So you got to give Alistair a shit ton of credit.
Oh, absolutely. And he seems to be going through a second resurgence now as well, because it seemed there for a while that the chin was a little diminished. But he's back, he's taking good shots, and he's looking fantastic. His last fight against, anyway, he looked great in it regardless.
Rosenstruck.
No, it wasn't him. But anyway, number five, Krokop. There's a guy, legendary name, deserves some respect. Was an absolute killer in Pride, had a great kickboxing career. Couldn't really put it together inside the UFC. Number five, here's his credentials. 2006 Pride FC Openweight Grand Prix Champion, 2012 K1 World Grand Prix Champion, 2016 Rising Openweight Grand Prix Champions. He loves a good fucking Grand Prix. You stick this man in a Grand Prix, he's winning it. He's taking it home.
You take him, you put him in there against Brendan Schaub, he's going to knock the fuck out.
He gets knocked out against Brendan Schaub, but you put him in a fucking Grand Prix.
You put him in a middleweight Grand Prix, he's going to kick some fucking heads off.
Stick him
left
in
kick hospital, right kick hem cemetery.
You stick him in a bloody situation where he's got multiple fights in one night, then now he comes alive. Now he's got something to get up for. Krokop. Yeah, I loved Krokop back in the day. I was a massive fan, and when he came to the UFC, I was full of enthusiasm. And you know, as I said, he had some good wins. He had some good losses.
Yeah, I remember he got knocked out by Gabe Gonzaga. I think maybe in a second fight.
That was I think that was his UFC debut.
He beat somebody in his debut,
It was UFC 70. And that was my first fight, second fight on my UFC contract, first fight in England, in Manchester. So I was there, I was ringside, because I just fought, got a good win. But when he got knocked out against Gonzaga, that entire arena that was making tons of noise, silent. It was fucking crazy.
They really wanted to have their fellow white European get a win that night. He got fucking knocked out by that fucking gorilla. Holy shit, dude. Gonzaga. Nobody knew Gonzaga could head kick anybody. It was like, it was insanity, dude. And then also the way that Krokop fell, do you remember? Like his leg was bent back. It was just a sort of like weird, like iconic, sad image of Krokop just broken in pieces.
I'll never forget. So, you always, you know, the Dana after the weigh-in has a little speech with all the fighters, and in there he will tell them the bonuses. Now it's set in stone, right? 50K, you know, for whatever it is. But back in the day, that used to change depending on how good Dana was in, on how big the fight was. You know, if this was trending to be a massive fight, there was a lot of money going to be generated. Sometimes, you know, it'd go, because it used to be 20,000, then it was 30,000, you know, then it went to 50, but sometimes it went as high as 100 or 60 or 70. And I think on that occasion, I forget entirely, but I know Krokop was pushing him for more money on the bonus, you know, and Dana's like, okay. And I think he went from 20 to 30 or 30 to 40. I forget it entirely because it was 15 years or 13 years ago or something. But then Krokop says they agreed on whatever the amount was. I think it was 30 or 40,000 for the bonus. And then Krokop says, oh, and can you pay taxes on that for us as well, Dana? And Dana's like, what the fuck, Krokop? We're paying you a shit ton of money. Everyone's going to pay taxes, buddy. Pay your own fucking taxes. And to your point, because I think they did have Krokop on a massive contract, and then fucking unknown Gonzaga, a jiu-jitsu guy with no striking, who's not supposed to knock anybody out, flies over to Manchester, supposed to be a sacrificial lamb, and fucking knocks Krokop out with his own fucking move. They're like, oh, God. That's why the sport is so unpredictable.
It was like a fucking video game. He took his move from him and used it on him.
His own fucking moves. Like, yeah, left kick, boom, there's one. All right, this is where it gets interesting. Number four, Stipe Miocic. Miocic. Stipe Miocic in at number four. Interesting. So that means, this is one of the top guys I would have thought. Number three, Randy Couture. Long time ago, people forget about Randy. But he was one of the first guys to really come with a game plan, you know, because it was all in the early days, how good are you at a certain skill? How tough are you? And all the rest of it. But Randy was one of the first guys, along with Frank Shamrock, that was really starting to implement a game plan in terms of looking at somebody and developing a strategy, assessing their weaknesses, their strengths, pushing them against the fence, dragging them into the later rounds, you know, really approaching it from a cerebral take. So he certainly deserves to be in there. UFC.
Also, I mean, another guy who, you know, crossed over generationally, right? Who ended up fighting and competing at a very, very high level after he was supposed to be, right? Really, really old. I forget the age, but he was, I think, probably holds the record for the oldest UFC champion ever, right? After he beat Tim Sylvia. I couldn't imagine there being anybody older. I think maybe I wasn't even considering Randy just because I just always consider him a 205 pounder just because of sort of, you know, that he became a star at 205 pounds. But yeah, it was, who do you win the title off of? Pedro Hizo?
Yeah, I'm not sure you're testing my knowledge there. It's early. It's 2 o'clock in the morning for you. It's 10 for me, Lewis. Don't ever do that. Don't ever put me on the spot again and make it clearly evident I don't know what I'm talking about.
Ryan, edit.
Number two, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. By the way, this is a Bleacher Report list, not my list, but it's interesting to see the takes they have. Number two, Nogueira. We've got a lot to talk about, so we'll move on. And number one, Fedor Emelianenko. So they don't even have DC on this list. I mean, really? it is a good list. Did I say DC earlier? I don't think I did. No, he's not on there.
I don't think you did.
I mean, the body of work in the UFC at heavyweight for DC isn't as much as other people.
But he did win the Strikeforce Grand Prix, which was a really massive accomplishment at the time, considering he was an alternate, wasn't even a guy that was supposed to be on it. And then came in, and after winning the 205-pound title, winning the heavyweight title, the first guy to ever do that, I think that's enough, definitely enough to be on the list, definitely enough to be on it over somebody like Junior Dos Santos or... you know, Crow Cop, in my opinion.
Well, I'm just going to go through his heavyweight wins or fights. Obviously, his last one was a loss to Stipe. He beat Derek Lewis and he beat Stipe, right? So, and then prior to that, I'm going to go back to Strikeforce. Here we go. Don Starling. I think he fought Frank Mir at heavyweight. Yeah, he did. Oh, Roy Nelson. So, yeah, Roy Nelson was heavyweight. He beat Roy Nelson. He beat Frank Mir. He beat Deon Starling. He beat Josh Barnett. He beat Antonio Silva. Beat Jeff Monson, Devin Cole, Saul Pellelli, Jason. Yeah, so they're the big names. I mean, there's some good ones in there. Jeff Monson, old school. Antonio Silva, Josh Barnett. I mean, they're three straight-up killers.
Well, Frank Mir, Roy Nelson. A bunch of the guys that are on that list, he has wins over. So that's just a little bit weird that
– Yeah. But,
you know, whatever. What are you going to do?
Yep. So anyway, go on. Pick. We're going to do this.
I'm going to pick. I'm picking sort of with my heart here. I like DC a lot. I love having him on the show. I want to see him win the title again. I think Steve is incredible, obviously, but I really like DC. And to be honest with you, I want to see what could possibly happen if Dana White could come to with that big golden checkbook and convince him to fight John Jones at heavyweight. Because as soon as you suggested that I got really excited to watch that fight happen.
No, listen, you know, the fact that Dana says, you know, we said this before, he's still very much pro Daniel Cormier fighting, you know, and normally when people say retirement, but Dana's like, nah, you're not retired. You still got it. You're still good. You're still drawing big bucks. Of course, if he didn't look up to it, Dana wouldn't want him to fight, but he can clearly still compete. Yeah, I don't know. The first fight, obviously, DC knocked him out quick. That ain't going to happen. Second fight, DC looked fantastic. He got a little tired, but he had well-documented back problems, and I feel like that definitely played part of it. In fact, he told me to him, to my face, when I was working with him recently. A few months ago, we were commentating together, and I was in the gym in the morning. He was in there back then on the treadmill for an hour, and he said, I could never do this in my last fight because of my back problems, but he had surgeries, had all that fixed. He went and worked with Evander Holyfield to work on defending against the body shots and stuff like that. So he's done a lot to try
working with Steven Seagal as well, which should be
Yes, of course, I forgot about that. Yeah, now this was a while ago, but Brian, can we play this footage? I was going to move on, but I'm glad you reminded me of that, Lewis. Let's pull out that little doozy of Steven Seagal giving some secret information.
So here's the thing. If there's anybody here who's going to see what I teach you and tell anybody about it,
they can't be there. Well, yeah. We'll thin them out. We'll thin them out there.
Daniel's asked me to show him a couple of things that are unusual. And I will do that. Let's see how it goes. Please turn that off.
What's up?
Yeah. Off. I mean, you know very well what could happen if he does one of those right. If he does one of those right, the game is over, the fight is over. You know that.
When was this for? When was this from?
I think that was on The Ultimate Fighter, Stipe versus DC. I'm going to stop saying that. I saw something in the comments, people talking shit, but whatever. That's when they did The Ultimate Fighter and Steven Seagal came on. Sensei Steven Seagal, pardon me, fucking respect the name. I loved Steven Seagal. Well, I think love might be a bit strong.
Wow.
But he's a, I don't love, but he's a great cat. I met him, didn't I, when I was filming Triple Threat in Bangkok, staying at the Four Seasons. There's Steven Seagal. And we hung out a few times. Very nice guy, generous with his time, very warm and charismatic, a little bit controversial, yeah, but we won't go into that. But he was very, very nice. And for me, as a martial arts fan and a martial arts movie fan, I'm sitting there. I don't smoke cigars. He taps me on the shoulder. He's like, Mike, you want to come and join me for whiskey and cigars? I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. I don't smoke cigars, but I'm going to pretend that I do. Fuck, who says no to that with Steven Seagal?
Yeah.
And I said, see, this is what we forgot. Seagal is showing him the secret moves. It's DC's fight all day.
Yeah, we should have considered that. What type of he does Aikido, right? Is there anything that you've ever seen in Aikido training or combat that could be used in a martial arts or a mixed martial arts fight?
It's a fucking no. Nobody's doing it, right? I remember when I used to do jiu-jitsu, the floating throw, right? You used to do a floating throw. People would run up and they throw like a big wild hook, and you parry the punch and you on the neck and you pivot with your feet and they go flying through the air. And in demonstrations, it looks amazing because they run at you, your opponent, and they swing the punch. But they know that they're going to go flying, and they play ball and they do a rolling break fall and it looks super impressive. You ever tried a fucking floating throw in real life in a UFC fight when someone's trying to punch you in the face? They don't work. You just get punched in the face. I've tried it, okay? And I'm not saying Japanese jiu-jitsu doesn't work, because it does. A lot of its fundamentals are fantastic.
We do a video for the show because we were supposed to do, you remember, like one, you were supposed to fight me one-armed or whatever?
Yeah.
You should only be able to use Aikido. I don't know Aikido,
okay? I don't know small joint manipulation, finger bends, fucking. Although I can pressure point a motherfucker.
Those are the only rules. You can do fucking throws and Aikido on me, but I can truly try to fight you.
I'm like this in my cat's paw stance, which is a good one. My Niko Ashidashi, for those people that want the Japanese terminolo.
I love Niko Akadashi. He's my favorite.
Niko Ashidashi. Why have I gone so dark? And Alfie, shut up! With next door neighbor banging on the door. Come in, Lucas! Just come in. Alfie's going to bite him. You're good. I'm podcasting. Please never disturb me ever again. Anyway, give me a pick. Right. I'm sorry. We're beating around the bush.
I picked DC.
I'm going to say DC as well. I fucking love Stipe as well. It hurts me to say that. But I work with DC. There you go. I'm going to see DC more. I don't have to see Stipe. He's up in Ohio. I'm going to take the coward's way out, and I'm going to say DC. There you go. Great night of fights. Can't wait to see it.
And, I'm pumped. We're going to Six Flags on Saturday, and then that night we're going to go to a bar and watch it with the whole crew in Jersey. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks for the invite once again. I appreciate it.
Come up to Six Flags. Come to Jersey, Bisping, please.
Okay.
Mike, really quick, let's thank one of our incredible sponsors, which is nativedeodorant.com. Unbelievable, incredible, all natural deodorant. Not only is it does it smell great, not only do they have incredible scents and all natural scents, but they do not use any of the crap you do not want to put in your body. Bisping, you are Mr. Anti-Aluminum. Since I've met you, you've been talking about how you do not like products with aluminum.
No, and I don't like products with aluminium either. Why? Well, I'll tell you, because it forms a plug in your sweat glands to keep you from sweating. That's why Native never uses ingredients like aluminum, parabens, sulfates, or talc. And switching to an aluminum-free deodorant doesn't mean you have to sacrifice an odor protection, because Native will keep you smelling and feeling fresh all day long. With over 10 scents, including their rotating seasonals, Native have something for everybody, like their popular classic scent, coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and citrus and herbal. Take a look on the website. There is something for everybody. Plus, Native is risk-free to try. Every product comes with free shipping within the US, plus 30-day free returns. Yes, try the deodorant. Realize it's not for you. Send it back.
I'll tell you right now, I love all of the scents. They sent us the whole box, so I've tried all of them at this point. The cucumber and mint is by far my favorite. Anytime I'm wearing Native deodorant, I'm hanging out with a chick, they lean in, they smell me, they go, oh my God, Lewis, usually you smell like shit. Right now, it's a whole new man. And it really is. It makes you a whole new man. I'll tell you right now, and we give you an incredible discount. Not only do you get the 30-day returns and exchanges, not only does everybody love it, you're not going to want to return it. It has over 14,000 five-star reviews on different websites. But we're going to give you 20% off your entire order if you go to nativedeo.com/BYM. nativedeo.com/BYM. You save 20% at checkout. Make sure you use that promo code. That lets them know that we sent you there. Plus, you get a discount. Plus, you get free returns if you guys don't like it. What do you got to lose? Go support Native Deodorant. Okay, where were we?
We made our picks. We're going to go through the notes that Harrington has compiled. The ones we don't get to, he can hammer fist you. Paige Van Zandt. Harrington, come on and just offer a little color for our listeners, please. And maybe for Lewis that doesn't know. But yeah, please. So give us the breakdown on Paige Van Zandt.
So basically Paige Van Zandt, in ahead of her last fight, said that she was interested in checking out free agency. She apparently fielded offers from ONE FC, from Bellator, from a number of different organizations. She finally settled on BKFC for a multi-fight deal that Melky Kawa went on Twitter yesterday, said it is a multi-million dollar deal over the course of the four fights.
And BKFC is Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships, for those of you that do not know, which it is exactly how it sounds. It is boxing with bare knuckles. No gloves. Do they tape the hands?
Yes.
They tape the hands.
They offer some kind of protection. And go on, give me your thoughts on this, Lewis, and then I'll give my thoughts. Mine are probably a slightly different angle.
Maybe. Look, my thoughts are, from a purely philosophical standpoint, it is her body to do what she wants to do with. She's making a lot of money, literally good for her. I really mean that. Like, I believe anybody who can go out and make some money and hustle and do whatever they can do with their skill set and maximize it and be as successful as possible with it, I respect in such a really real way. However, there's just something really brutal about bare knuckle fighting championships. And I think in juxtaposition with how cute and pretty and how nice she is, I think it's going to seem even that much more brutal. I don't know if I'm her team. It's just not the right fit. I think that she could be a massive star in MMA. I think she can go to a lot of these other organizations. It doesn't have maybe Bare Knuckle FC will be where the UFC is at in 20 years, right? Who knows? Maybe it will be. But I just – it doesn't – I don't know why – I don't want to see her get her fucking face thrashed up like that. It's weird. I'm not even a huge fan of hers, but it doesn't really appeal to me.
Yeah, listen, I agree with everything you said. And I want to choose my words carefully because I don't want to be insulting to Paige. Let me tell you, Paige is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. She really is. I don't know her particularly well, but I've like been a guest fighter with her at the same time. You know, I've seen her around the UFC circles here and there. Lovely girl. you know, lovely, lovely girl. Never had a bad interaction. Never had a bad experience. Her husband, Austin, or fiance, I forget which one. I think husband now. He was cornering her in Abu Dhabi. And I spoke to him a few nights in the gym, like 5 in the morning, because obviously we were on nights, you know. And just what a fucking great guy. I'm telling you, the pair of them, just great people. So,
and people like to take shots at both of them, but...
Yeah, you know, they do. But I'm telling you, listen, you know when somebody leaves a really good impression, and then when he walked away after a conversation, I was like, fuck me, what a solid guy. What a fucking nice, like, caring, warm, really, you could see he really cared for her, and just a fucking great guy. So I'm not talking shit. I'm not talking shit at all. I agree with what you said, Bare Knuckle FC. It's, I don't know. It's, that's like where someone goes when they get cut from the UFC and they get cut from Bellator, and then they've got no other options open to them, right? And, you know, she got cut from the UFC, and that's all well and good. And she's chasing money. And obviously, Bare Knuckle FC have offered her the most money. They've offered her more money than what Bellator could. But that's it. That's as high as your ceiling's going to be, right? Bare Knuckle is never going to be like the UFC is. It's always going to be. Don't get me wrong. They seem to have some money. They're attracting some bigger names. And God bless them all. I hope they all do well. I hope they make endless amounts of money and everything's fucking great. When this is a multi-million dollar deal, that could be maybe 500,000 over four fights. Could be 300,000, which is 1.2 million. You know what I mean? So it's not millions and millions and millions of dollars. However, the problem is what that's saying. Is that like Paige is giving up, right? Because you can earn that money in the UFC. You can, if you believe that you're the best in the world.
If you conceive it.
And you become, and you conceive it, then you certainly can. As a wise samurai once said, you can certainly achieve it, right? You can, though, in the UFC. If you're good enough, the cream will rise to the top. And if you become the champion and you get all the pay-per-view points and all the rest of it, you can make millions of dollars. Look at Conor McGregor. Look at Amanda Nunes. Look at Shevchenko. Look at Daniel Cormier, Stipe Miocic. The money's there for the best people. John Jones, you know, there's a little dispute there, but he makes very, very good money. Millions and millions, probably 5-6 million per fight, right? The money's there. So when you're taking the short view option, the short change, the fast money, the quick money in the short run is going to be there, but in the long run, you're better off with the UFC or even a Bellator. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. I think she's probably better off. The problem with the UFC is I don't think that, and once again, no disrespect to Paige, I don't know. I don't think that Paige would ever be a UFC champion. And I think that if she was going to be, she'd still be there, right? And I think the problem with that is I don't think she makes the millions and millions being in the UFC the same way she'd make elsewhere. I think she could go and probably become a Bellator champion or become a champion in other mixed martial arts organizations and make maybe less money per fight in the short term, but have a much longer career. I mean, how long are you going to be doing bare knuckle boxing? I mean, how many times can you, you know, be that? That's a brutal fucking sport. And then you have this chick who, you know, you'd be stupid to not point out the fact that she's beautiful. That is a big part of your appeal, Paige. Once you have the scar tissue, once you look like Michael Bisping or Nick Diaz or one of these guys, with no offense, Bisping, you're beautiful for a man. Women like this grizzled, beat-up look. But if she had scar tissue all over her face and she looked like a fucking, you know, like it's not exactly, I don't think overall for Paige's longevity in her career and what she's looking to do, I shouldn't say because I don't know what she's looking to do, but that just, it doesn't seem like it's the smartest path.
Yeah, I agree. And again, we'll move on in a second because I don't want her to see this and, you know, I'm sure she doesn't watch this, but think that we're being negative or anything like that because I'm not, and I wish her the best. I wish everybody the best once they're done with the UFC because it's hard for fighters, you know, and there is limited options. So good for her. I'm really happy for her that she's making good money. But certainly with bare knuckle boxing, again, you know, I saw tweets yesterday and it kind of summed it up. It was a little insulting, but they went, Paige VanZant signing with Bare Knuckle FC. 1 minute you're headlining Big Fox and going on Dancing with the Stars, the next minute you're competing at a truck stop in Wyoming. You know what I mean? And there is certainly that, you know, that kind of disparity because fighting in the UFC or even Bellator, which is owned by Viacom, there is going to be other avenues that come to the forefront, to the pipeline, you know, going on TV shows, morning breakfast shows that Regis and Kelly or whatever. Some fighters go on that type of stuff. Certainly pretty girls like that. You might see Michelle Waterson and people like that. They have the ability to cross over, you know, into that mainstream. Look at Ronda Rousey for crying out loud. You know what I'm saying? In Bare Knuckle FC, and no disrespect to them, I'm not trying to shit on them. It's not going to have that same cachet, that same prestige, that same aura of professionalism around it. And I just feel it might be hard to come back from that. You know, I hope I'm wrong. Maybe I am wrong.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, once again, there's so many other paths. Even the WWE, I could have seen Paige going the WWE route. She has a name. She's super cute. Like, that could have been like a persona there, like a nice girl, like. I wonder if she even had conversations with him. I bet you she did, because the reality is she does have that star. There's not many other people that are less accomplished in mixed martial arts that have that star power. You know what I'm saying? I don't think there is anybody at all. So it's sort of interesting. I mean, everything from Paige, hit me up, Gas Digital. We'll give you a podcast. Fuck, don't go have your face beaten to death without any fucking gloves on. It's crazy.
We need to rediscuss our deal. You're offering more money than Bare Knuckle FC camp to do a podcast. We're going to discuss our terms. Anyway,
I'm just saying she can do a podcast forever.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, best of luck with that. And you're right. You know, she doesn't want to get mangled up. You know, who knows? Who knows? Who knows what happens? I wish her the best. Let's skip forward to number three here. Luke Rockhold, our old friend Luke Rockhold. I'm going to try and not talk shit here, but Harrington, I'll let you stir the pot initially. But Luke Rockhold was not impressed by Weidman's performance last weekend, calling it pathetic, which is a little rich, and wouldn't mind running it back with a former champion, but he would prefer Fight Island to the Apex. Harrington, elaborate.
Well, he was he's pretty disparaging about the UFC Apex shows. You know, he's saying that it's essentially like hard sparring. There's no fans. It's hard for him to get up for a fight like that. And then looking back at that Weidman fight, he said he was absolutely disgusted by it, a pathetic performance, and he can't see anybody who he'd rather make his return against at 185.
Why is the Apex any more like sparring than Fight Island? I'm talking to the guy.
I thought you. I thought you were asking Harrington, and I was like, I've worked at both of these. I personally have been inside both venues. Okay, Harrington, what is the difference there? I've got changed there. I've got into my suit. I've had my makeup done. I've used the bathroom in both places. I've dropped a deuce at Fight Island and at the Apex. Okay, keep that to yourself. Okay. No, they're essentially the same. I don't know what Luke's talking about there. They are essentially the same. I will say at Fight Island, there is more people in the building, but there's certainly not a crowd. You know, but there was more people. Obviously, they haven't got the Athletic Commission. I think I could be wrong, but I think it's the local regulatory body, the government officials, which are running things there. You know, obviously, safety protocols are massive, but there is some more people. Just seems to be more staff around and maybe a few select VIP guests. I'm talking royal family members or whatever. But again, there's certainly no fucking crowds. Far from a crowd. You know, you might see two, and everyone's separate, but there's just a few chairs here and there. There's production staff and all the rest of it. But other than being a remarkably small amount of people more, there really isn't any difference there. So I don't know why he's got such a bee in his bonnet about the Apex.
Yeah, I'd probably prefer Fight Island. I'm not really keen on the quarantine back and forth, but I'd prefer that over Vegas, fighting in the UFC Tough Gym or whatever the fuck that is. It just sounds lame. It just sounds really, really lame. He's got a chip on his shoulder, Luke Rockhold. Every time I hear a quote from him, it is just sort of like, it's like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. He just always sounds depressed. He's never like happy or excited. Like, just fucking have a little bit of fun. Have a laugh. Joke around a little bit, Luke. I've never seen the guy even crack a smile.
Yeah. And then, of course, to call out Chris Weidman's performance as pathetic, you know, that's a little harsh, isn't it? I mean, if I remember rightly, Chris Weidman won by decision, didn't get knocked out cold in his last fight in the second round. You know what I'm saying?
There are worse, more pathetic performances.
To be calling his performance pathetic after he got knocked out. And Jan Blachowicz, shout out Jan, great fighter, heavy hitter, big fucking dude. But they all are at light heavyweight, and he stepped up to light heavyweight and got knocked out cold. Now, I'm not saying that's pathetic. I would never call that pathetic. You know, they both had the courage to step into the cage. But to say that Weidman's performance was pathetic when you're coming off the back of that.
Bisping, you're not calling anything pathetic. What happened is Luke Rockhold has defined pathetic as
winning by decision,
a gutsy decision, you know, close decision against you know, an up and coming killer. That's a standard of pathetic right there. So you're not saying anything.
So what is getting knocked out in the second round? What is the applicable word here?
I mean, just we know it's at least pathetic.
Grotesque.
I would say, damn, you're sacrilegious.
Laughable.
I would say
shameful. Shame.
Shame. Shame.
A shameful performance.
Let's get the shame bell. Can we get the shame bell right there, Brian? Thank you.
Jesus Christ. Brian.
Shame.
Shangalangalang. Shangalangalang. Anyway, so yeah, take it easy on Chris Weidman. I'd like to see that fight, though. That rematch would be great. And of course, Luke Rockhold, anytime he opens his mouth, God bless him. I like Luke. He's all right. I know it doesn't sound like it, but when he's saying things like that, it's easy not to, you know.
And you would think that people wouldn't want to go to Fight Island, that having to do the whole, I mean, the way you described the quarantine in the hotel room, the multiple tests, the back and forth, it seems like a lot of extra shit that if I'm a fighter where it's already, you know, distracting, already high pressure, already a lot going on, fight week, all this crazy shit, to add that level of stress seems like it's a lot.
Yeah, but there is also that level of, you know, that mystique Fight Island. You know, if I was still competing, I'd definitely want to fight on Fight Island.
You would?
Why? Of course. It's just fucking cool. Where are you going? I'm flying off to Fight Island, baby. Abu Dhabi, Middle East. Yeah, we've got our own island. We're doing it badass. We've got Fight Island t-shirts. It's just cool. I'd like to be a part of that. It's kind of historic. It'll be like a memorable thing, you know, over the years. It's like
this little slice of history and it had to happen.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I understand it from that perspective. Because once this whole thing passes, and it will pass, I mean, Russia releasing fucking vaccines right now, baby boy. We're saved. Vladimir Putin has come to the fucking rescue. Once this passes, we'll all get back to normal. And Fight Island will be a thing of the past. It will have been nice to compete on that. All right, where should we go next? Just quickly here, Yoel Romero. Is that to bow out of his co-main event against Uriah Hall on August 22nd? No reason was given. No reason was given. I'll decipher that. It's called getting old. That's what he's injured. I would say he's injured. What's your guess, Harrington? Do you have any ears to the ground, Harrington? Do you have any inside info? I'm going to say he's injured because he's 370 years old.
Well, you know, people have made mistakes before. They've ended up in lawsuits by making claims about why Yoel Romero couldn't make it to the cage. So I'm not going to step in any kind of a landmine
Whoa. Insinuating bloody USADA implications there.
I'm not insinuating anything, Michael.
That is an avenue of antagonistic behavior that we will not go down on this show.
All right. Well, I just see when guys pull out with no reason given and you know, then the trial happens. Then 6 months later, we hear about it. That, to me, when I hear no reason given, that's the first place my head goes. Sorry about that.
Lewis, say something for me.
I
don't have to say it.
Look, Bisping, you can't say it. You are friends with Yoel Romero now and the entire Cuban population. You love Cuba. You love the culture, the food, favorite type of sandwich, favorite type of cigar. Okay, it's a fact.
Cuba.
But I'll tell you right now.
I'm a salsa. Go on.
You see a man who is, you know, 445 years old, who's built like a Greek god, you know, chiseled from fucking rock, chiseled from stone. He's defying nature. He's defying age. When he pulls out of a fight out of nowhere, you have to just go, okay,
but this what's is going the new on thing. Right now? This is the new thing, because I did, this story broke either yesterday or the day before, and I was Googling several websites because I was genuinely curious. I was looking forward to that fight, Uriah Hall and Yoel Romero. I think it was a closer fight than what people would have initially thought. You know, Yoel seems to, you know, he seems to have lost a little bit of a step. His last fight against Adesanya obviously was lackluster. So he had a lot to prove in that fight. And Uriah Hall is getting better and better working with coach Saif Saud down at 47 MMA in Texas. So I was interested in that fight. So I was curious. I thought, oh, well, what is the injury? So I did a little preliminary Google search and there's nothing. And one would be led to believe if it was an injury, there will be talk of it, right? But now if there's a USADA infraction, they don't make that public.
Yeah, they're not allowed to talk about it. So when you hear them say nothing,
then it comes out late. It's happened a few times. People say nothing, then ultimately it does come out. So, all right. Well, listen, I hope for his sake that it isn't that. But if it is, I don't know, maybe he gets another $27 million lawsuit.
Yeah, maybe.
Last time he got $27 million. I don't know.
Was that how much it was?
He sued a supplement company because there were steroids in the supplement.
Yeah, that's right. And he was awarded, we discussed it. Yeah.
He was awarded $27 million. $27 million fucking dollars. Why is he even still fighting? I don't even think he was paid. All right, where should we go with this now, guys? What do we say? What do we say? Should we let Harrington Hammerfist us?
Harrington Hammerfist. We got a little bit of time left here on the show. Real quick, let me do plugs. You love the show. Go to our iTunes. Leave us our 5-star ranking. Positive review. Tell some friends about the show. You guys love the show. We love all of the positive feedback, even the negative feedback, even the people that are like, dude, I fucking hate Lewis. Why is he even on the show? You're new. You're new to the show. Give it a few weeks. You're going to understand what's going on. I get the best out of Bisping. Bisping loves me here. Just fucking understand this is the fucking best dynamic in comedy and MMA podcasting. It just is what it is, okay? Go to our YouTube channel. Leave us leave us a nice comment. Why not? We love the positive comments as well, but subscribe and hit the notification button. Every time a brand new show drops on YouTube, you will be notified right to your cell phone. And if you guys want access to the entire on-demand library for the Believe in Me podcast, every episode that we've ever done from the beginning. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to start, Harrington, I'm going to start stealing old countdown episodes from SiriusXM. I want you to find them and I want you to put them in the bonus section now, Harrington. I don't care. SiriusXM can send me a cease and desist. We're going to fucking make this happen, okay? Go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the promo code BYM, get a 14-day free trial. You get access to the entire on-demand library, everything we've ever done, uncensored, ad-free, and all that good stuff. Once again, gasdigitalnetwork.com. And last but not least, if you guys want to join the conversation, send us any content, fan art, fan pictures, videos, rap songs like we played on the last show, bympod@gmail.com is the email address. Just shoot us all of your fan questions, video questions, everything right to that email address. And we will get to it eventually. So,
yes. All right, Harrington, show yourself.
It's time to hammer fist.
And deliver a crushing hammer fist blow.
All right. UFC 255 will feature two title matchups in the flyweight division with Cody Garbrandt dropping down to take on Davison Figueiredo, as well as Jennifer Maia stepping in for Joanne Calderwood against Valentina Shevchenko. Michael Bisping, I have to ask, is Cody Garbrandt the right man to be challenging for the 125-pound belt right now?
Well, Mike Harrington, I just want to say this real fast. For the last few shows now, trying to put in this talk of Cody Garbrandt and Piotr Jan, Davison Figueiredo and Shevchenko and Jennifer Maia. And I'm like, we've got big fights on the horizon. We will discuss that down the line. Question was, is Cody Garbrandt the right person to fight? Who is it again?
Davison Figueiredo.
Oh, Davison Figueiredo. Yes. I understand there's other people that maybe deserve to be in front of him, but also they haven't got the star power. They haven't got the star power that Cody Garbrandt's got. He's a former champion at 135. He's a fucking knockout artist. He says he can make 125 easily. The flyweight division, they obviously, you know, they talked about getting away, you know, doing away with it for a while, but they brought it back. They need big fights. They need star power. They need to make the division exciting and sexy. And while some of the other contenders maybe have a resume there and are more deserving because they have fights at 125, Cody Garbrandt is a guy, and the matchup with Figueiredo, that fight's going to be fucking ballistic. That fight's going to be fireworks. That fight's going to bring a lot of attention to the flyweight division. So for all those reasons, I think it's genius matchmaking.
I agree with you, Mike. And also, I got to, you know, to when you talk about, you know, Cody stepping down, he's coming down. It's not like it's a guy stepping up, which we've seen. We've seen that happen. We've seen guys move up a weight class coming off of a loss and get title shots. So the precedent's been set. Marketing matters, you know, marketability matters. And the 125-pound division, you know, it's holding on by a thread here. For people don't really give a shit that much about 125, you need to sort of have those storied matchups, those big names. And Cody Garbrandt being a former champion, that's as big as a name as you could put at 125.
Sorry, I'm very distracted here. Callum just brought me in. I asked for a cup of tea. He brought me in a cup of tea with a huge chip out of the cup and with the tea bag still in the Callum, you remove the tea bag, son. You remove the tea bag. Anyway, Harrington.
I keep my tea bag in the tea.
Yeah, well, you know, each to their own. Potato, potato. Let's go.
All right, Paulo Costa roasted Israel Adesanya this week over Twitter for his new pink hair, saying the only thing more disturbing in this video was your fight against Romero. Somebody tell USADA to test him for too much estrogen. Luis J. Gomez, what do you think about the champ's hair?
Ooh, I got to see the hair. I haven't seen the pink hair. Pull it up right now. I would love pull it up for the fans as well while we're here. We got to see it.
Lewis, you never saw this. I mean, what made it even better was that he used one of those Instagram filters that had like all that sparkles in the air around him. You know, the ones that all the chicks use to make their skin tone gray?
I saw the video. I did not realize that was actually Israel Adesanya's hair.
That's his hair. He's dyed it pink. But hey, listen. Good for him. Who cares? I mean, what is your judgment on that, Lewis? Oh, look at that.
There it is.
I got to say, it's not my cup of tea. But on Adesanya, he rocks it. He looks good.
Real men wear pink. It's a sign of confidence. You know, it's stupid. But the reality is, like, who gives a shit? He's one of the baddest men on the planet. He can. It's like when you're that badass and you're 185-pound champion of the world, you can do stupid things. And what is anyone going to say?
Yeah, listen, look at Harrington. He's very comfortable with his sexuality and this thing. He's got a pink bandana. He's got pink rose-colored spectacles on. Harrington and Adesanya are essentially the same person wrapped into one. On the inside, they are the same. No, Adesanya, I like it. It looks good. Of course, what's his face? Costa's going to talk shit. They're fighting. Costa's talking mad shit. Harrington, finger up at the back.
I wanted to ask you about this. Speaking of the shit he's been talking, he says, even after I knock him out, I won't shake his hand. Michael Bisping, have you ever seen fighters who are actually that mad at each other where after the fight they couldn't, you know, shake hands?
It does happen on occasion. Like when I fought Jorge Rivera, I didn't want to shake his hand. I was like,
Luke
no,
Rockhold didn't
ass.
Want to shake Mike Bisping's hand after he got knocked out by him.
I shook his hand twice. No, I shook his hand once. And then the second time round, I put my hand out to shake his hand again. Yeah. And he goes, I already shook your hand. And then I'm like, all right, well, if that's how you want to be, fuck you, motherfucker. Gloves are off. I just want to say this. Callum, come here. Right, so we have one of those Keurig coffee makers, right? You put the pod into the... You've been at our house, Lewis. You've seen it.
Of course, yes.
We got a Keurig, a pod coffee thing. And then I asked for tea, right? Not only did he leave the tea bag in, he's obviously left the coffee pod in the machine. So I have a mixture of coffee and tea blended together with the tea bag still in. I mean, listen, we're going to have a serious conversation.
Are you going to hit him?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to hit him. I'm going to hit him.
Forget hit him right now.
Anyway, Harrington, yeah, go ahead. Next one, buddy.
All right. YouTuber Logan Paul took to Twitter this week offering $10,000 to any influencer who could be in a wrestling match. I know Ben Askren has volunteered. Michael Bisping, you've put forward Callum Bisping so far. Luis J. Gomez, anybody you'd want to see wrestle Logan Paul for $10,000?
An influencer that could out-wrestle Logan Paul. I'm going to say, forget Callum. We already know what happened when Callum tried to challenge Michael Bisping. Michael Bisping put him through his fucking living room floor, okay? Michael Bisping needs to step up. 10,000 smackaroos for the Believe in Me podcast. We all go to a little, maybe a little strip club vacation down in Texas or something with the winnings, because I think Michael Bisping easily out-wrestles Logan Paul.
I'll give $10,000 to whoever can get me a decent cup of fucking tea. Okay, let's just start with that. Callum, you suck. No. I saw Logan Paul saying that on Twitter. He's like, I'll give $10,000 to whoever. So I said, I'll get Callum to do it for free. I'll wrestle Logan Paul. Logan, let's do this, buddy. I'll fucking wrestle the shit out of it. And I'm not even a wrestler, you fucking YouTube dickhead. Let's go.
What are Logan Paul's credentials?
Callum said he's a wrestler, but I forget the state. Callum! He's not playing ball. He's not coming anywhere near the podcast. I keep shouting him to come over. He's like, no, I am not being sucked in or sucked off by Harrington, which I don't want to see either. But he said the state, wherever he wrestled, he said, yeah, Dad, he's a state champion or a state placer. He placed at state, he said, but their wrestling credentials suck. I forget the name.
So it wasn't super impressive in terms of where he wrestled. No. Okay.
So Logan Paul, Jake Paul, whoever you are, in fact, both of you, Logan brothers, Logans, let's go. I will.
You do one round wrestling, one round kickboxing. It's alternate back and forth.
That is my challenge to you. If you man up, let's do it. Take it. Take the offer, Harrington.
All right. Michael Bisping, Roman Bagatov, you called his fight at UFC 251. He threw three illegal knees in that fight, was deducted 2 points for the last one with a knee to a downed opponent. He has had ties cut to the UFC. Do you agree if a fighter is committing that many fouls in their UFC debut that they are ready for the promotion?
Yeah, I'd say so, right? Because it's his first fight with the UFC. He lost the fight as well. Right, let's just start with this. When you've you know, when you get a UFC contract, those fights on the contract aren't guaranteed. They have the ability to cut you with every time you lose. That's why winning is so important, because number one, it guarantees your job and then everything else that goes along with it. But you still have a job. UFC don't have to keep you. They don't have to choose to pay you a handsome amount of money to fight. So number one, when you show up, you want to win. You want to be entertaining. You want to put on a good fight. You want to show that you have potential to be a title challenger one day, perhaps even a champion. But you also got to show that you respect the organization, you do what you're told fight week, you meet your obligations, you do your press obligations, you toe the line to a certain degree, you know, and then also you follow the rules, which is absolutely imperative.
Yeah.
You know, the
which are designed to respect your opponent. I mean, you guys are both getting in there, you know, to really go to war. And I think that, you know, and so I apologize to cut you off, but it's sort of like the idea that you would regularly foul your opponent, it's massively unfair to the guy you're fighting.
Yeah, not just that. I mean, you know, the UFC, if you compare it to a long time ago, the UFC was frowned upon and wasn't allowed on. Now, you know, with the modern mixed martial arts rules and the regulation and the commissions and all the rest of it, the drug testing, you know, it's presented as a very, very safe sport. But of course, listen, it isn't a sport for the faint-hearted. We're still going out there and trying to knock our opponents out, trying to grapple them into submission and force chokes on them and all the rest of it, which is still hard for some people to accept. So you got to make sure that the fighters, when they're in there, when they're being broadcasted internationally all over the world, that they're adhering to the guidelines and adhering to the rules and doing what they're fucking told, and they're respecting the referees. And if they're not respecting the referees, if they're very, you know, they're not respecting the rules, they're throwing multiple fucking shots to the groin, and you lose your fight and the fight sucked, it's like, yeah, all right, buddy. You three strikes and you're gone. You lost. Your fight sucked. You did 27 nut shots and you fucking, and you threw a pint of lager in Dana White's face. You do all those things. You believe it or not, you're not going to have a job Monday morning.
Would he have won the fight had he not lost, had the point deductions?
I'm not sure. I'd have to recall the fight.
And that one was actually for Harrington.
Oh, Harrington.
No, I believe it was 29-26 across the board, and he was deducted 2 points, so it still would have been a 29-28 loss.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, listen, unfortunately, you know, maybe you'll get another chance, go get some more wins, and show you can stick to the rules. You got to do that. I mean, as I said, that's a big one, right? If it's showing all over the world in all these countries now, I forget how many countries show it, but it's a lot of countries, hundreds of countries broadcast the UFC, and it's got to be seen that the fighters stick to the rule set and are reprimanded strongly when they don't, you know.
Has there ever been another fighter that has been cut for fouling? I think Jose Mar Pujares had a bunch of like late stoppages, and I think he was cut. That's one that I can think of off the top of my head, but it doesn't happen too often. Can you think of anybody else who was sort of like?
I forget. Oh, there's one other guy. Go on.
I can. Sorry.
No. I forget. Go on.
British guy, black guy, punched Josh Koscheck after the bell.
Oh, Paul Daly.
Paul Daly, yep. And he was banned. He's never gotten a chance in the UFC again.
Yeah, that was a shame as well, because I know Paul. I used to train with him back in the day, one of my original training partners. Great guy, fucking tough as balls fighter as well. Massive left hook. Paul Semtex Daly, good dude. Shout out Paul Daly. Yeah, kind of blew it. You know, came to the UFC with a big reputation. I think he got one win, and then he fought Josh Koscheck, got out wrestled, and then was super fucking.
But just held down the whole time. Oh, it's so frustrating.
It's so frustrating, especially when you're Paul Daly and you want to talk shit and you don't like the guy. You know what I mean? And you just want to fucking crack him. And he was so pissed off afterwards. He couldn't contain himself. He just walked over and cracked him one anyway. Fucking wild man. Fucking wild. That's Paul Daly. Paul Daly is a wild man, let me tell you, from back in the day. The English don't fuck about, you know. It's great.
Pretty,
I love it.
It's pretty. It's not good, obviously. I am
in no way, shape, or form condoning.
But it's still pretty badass. Like, what you're talking about, like, you know, wasn't there...
It's not badass. You look like a pussy. You actually look like a pussy, but I get what you're saying. The rebellious nature of it.
Yeah, it's just, it's not like, I'm not going like, oh my God, he shouldn't be allowed in fighting. He's committed a violent act. Yeah, okay,
it should be okay. You want to punish him? Give him a rematch. Let him do it to him all over again. Yeah, there, dude. You go.
Josh Koscheck was also sort of a cunt. I don't know him personally, but what I should say.
Oh, you don't know him personally? You just called him a cunt on this massive international podcast?
Well, I met him twice.
Wow.
But
wow,
he, the way they edited him on The Ultimate Fighter was this cocky, brash dickhead, like just was not super likable from what I remember of his character on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yes.
It's unfair to say that he's a dickhead because I'm sitting here with you and they literally did the same exact thing to you.
That is correct. They did do that, but let me tell you, he is a cocky, brash C-U-N-T. I don't know if he's, I don't know if he is. I don't know him at all, but he's definitely cocky and brash. We know that. Harrington, what else you got? We got about 5 more minutes left, and I've unfortunately got to sign out of this one. So, Harrington,
come. I would have done 2 stuff. More hours of show today. I'll tell you right now.
Oh, well. Hold it. You're full of shit. We're doing it early because you got to go to a fucking gig. You said it at the top of the show. Shut the fuck up. Go, Harrington. Talk to me. Sausage.
Max Roshkop has also been let go by the UFC. If you remember, that was the fighter who quit on his stool in between rounds. He was 5-0 coming into the UFC. Luis J. Gomez, as an undefeated pro fighter still, what would you recommend next for Max?
I mean, obviously, Ellis Mania. We probably need some strong fighters in the undercard with some credentials, some UFC credentials. So I would say, you know, maybe if he wants to come work on Team Rattlesnake, I'll take him under my wing. Maybe show him a little something about heart, a little something about not giving up.
I wanted to talk about this, and then I noticed in the notes, Harrington, you had a quote from Dana White. Read out your quote from Dana White. Go.
All right, this is from the night of. There's no shame in getting in here and finding out if you're not it. There's no shame in it at all. You gave it a shot. It didn't work out. Anybody who would try to ridicule a kid like that, fuck you. Come try it. Come try and do what he did. Very few people can do it.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. And fortunately for yourself, you preempted that with that. This was from the night, right? This is, I don't know how much time has passed. A lot of time has passed. I was reading articles on this yesterday from Roshkoff himself. You've got a 3-month-old quote from Dana White that is out of context right now. I mean, fair play. What Dana said there is absolutely true. I do agree with it. But the more updated version, we can hear from Roshkoff himself after he's been cut. Here's what he said. Obviously, as we know, the fight started early. For those that don't know, fight started, he was doing well early, but he started to gas. And at the end of the second round, he kind of quit on his stool. And he said, talking to MMA Fighting, he said, I've done this my whole life. Roshkoff explained, I've boycotted myself, even when I was wrestling in high school. He's not from Australia, but I don't know why I fucking said my whole life. He said, no, I've done this my whole life. I've self-boycotted myself. Even when I was wrestling in high school, I was the best in the state, and I ended up getting third because I self-boycotted myself. I was one of the best guys in the country in college, but I was never an All-American when it counted because I was telling myself that for whatever reason, I don't deserve it. And that's exactly what happened when I did my fight with Austin. Shit got hard. I looked at my coach and I said, I don't want to be here anymore. Not because I didn't want to be there, because I didn't think I deserved to be there. And that's kind of what I was saying at the time, right? Because it seemed like I was kind of being critical. But he definitely did not weather the storm. He definitely quit when the going got tough. And that's why, and that's the thing that I wanted to talk about, but I haven't really got too much time. I really do have to go. But, you know, he's got all the physical tools. He's saying himself he was the best wrestler in the country and his wrestling credentials were outstanding. And he did show a little bit of greatness. But once you start hitting a bit of adversity, I mean, it's the mental issues. It's the nerves. It's the anxiety that he's struggling to deal with, you know, and it wasn't going his way. And then the self-doubt starts to creep in and you feel that you don't deserve to be there. And he quit on the stool, you know. And unfortunately, he didn't show the mental toughness that is required to compete in this sport, because you do need the mental toughness, not just the physical toughness. The mental toughness is also very, very important.
Just devil's advocate, maybe. I don't know. Why wouldn't he? Because this is what I would do. Instead of quitting on my stool, I would come out and I would just fucking take the shot and fucking, you know, get TKO'd or whatever it is. I would just go out on my shield. I would, you know, get submitted. I would, whatever it would be better than quitting on the stool. The disconnect for me, and I'm not a fighter. I'm not an athlete. Definitely not an athlete by any means. I can't understand why he wouldn't at the very least save face and go. And it's not taking a dive. You know, if you're just sort of like tired and exhausted, and, you know, why wouldn't he just go back out and just lose versus not coming back out?
Well, I mean, a number of reasons. Number one, it fucking hurts. You want to go out there in round three? The guy was exhausted. He was tired. He was exhausted. He had nothing left. He was mentally beaten. He was defeated internally, right? In his mind, he was done. He was beat. And he didn't want to go out there, maybe get fucking knocked out cold, get head kicked in the face, get elbowed, have your jaw broken. There's any, you know, number of possibilities that could have happened. He didn't want to go through that. He knew he was beaten. And I respect the fact that he's like, listen, it takes balls to do that. It does. It also, some people might say it's very cowardly, but it also takes balls to say, do you know what? I'm done. I'm beaten here. And I respect him for being man enough to say that to you. And to say what he said there in that statement, that takes a lot of self-realization. You know what I mean? It's a lot of honesty there. And it's not easy to be that honest about yourself. Because here's a guy here's a guy that's dedicated his entire life to combat sports, high-level wrestler, undefeated as a mixed martial artist, tremendous grappling. But then he goes out there, quits on the stool and says, listen, I often do this. I internalize it too much. I overthink it. And then I think I don't belong to be here. And that sabotages his own performance. I mean, that's something that only a sports psychologist or something like that will be able to fix and be able to help. Because it's not the end of the road for this man. He's certainly got the skills, you know, but I say it all the time. This is the most important muscle when it comes to being a fighter, being any kind of high level competitor, whether it's physical or not, right? The pressure, the nerves, the anxiety, dealing with all those exterior distractions, you know, that may affect your performance. It's fucking hard. It's a whole balancing act. You've got your team, you've got social media, you've got the UFC, you've got your family at home, you've got all these people, you've got the crowd sometimes, you've got people watching on TV, and, you know, a lot of people are cheering for you to lose, and you've got to fucking deal with that. And don't forget
about all the slew of personal problems that probably go on. Like, we all forget, like, you have all the things you named, and then he's probably fighting with his girlfriend, his fucking mom. He hasn't talked to his mom in 3 years. You know, I don't know his personal story, but everyone's got their own personal issues as well that all fall into place. So sometimes somebody's in a mental place and in a mental funk, and it has nothing to do with their ability. It's all these other things that are sort of weighing down on them. So it is very interesting. And my first reaction was like, yeah, it's a little cowardly to quit on your stool. But when you sort of say it that way and you look at his self-reflection and his honesty, you do have to respect it. Either way, and you can give me your opinion on this, I would sort of deduce that he probably doesn't belong in high-level competitive mixed martial arts where your life is on the line if you have that sort of self-doubt to that level, because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at one point. If he does not believe that he can, you know, get through that, I don't think physically he's going to be able to get through that.
Well, you never know. You never know. He might come back. You know, he might make some mental changes, work with a sports psychologist, as I said. And let's not forget, he took the fight on short notice as well, so he got tired. And being tired is the worst fucking thing. But unfortunately, I have to go. You brought the show forward, and I have an obligation at 12, and we're going to have a prep call. Now, I'm supposed to be on another podcast, The Hustle Business Insider. I don't know why they want to speak to me. I can't hustle. I'm not a business insider. Lewis, what do you want?
Well, no, I was going to say, put a pin in that conversation because I did think that was very interesting. Yes. And I wanted to ask you about your experience with a sports psychologist because you have seen one before. We talked about it on the radio show back in the day. So next episode, please, I would love to talk about that.
I'm using my mental powers on you right now to say for the third fucking time, the show is over. Show is over. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your weekend. Tune into the fights. Enjoy the fights. I can't wait to watch it. Lewis and I will be back Monday morning. And yeah, that's it.